Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Riti Iyengar, and I'm a senior research manager at Express Scripts, which is a pharmacy benefit management company. Today, I would like to present the findings from a study that we did early this year on the trends and cost and utilization patterns of aging-related medications. Aging-related medications in this study are not what you typically associate with old age, not the chronic medications. What they are, I'll just get into it in a second. My colleagues and I have had no personal financial relationships with commercial interests or conflicts of interest relevant to this presentation during the past 12 months, and the views expressed in this presentation are those of the authors and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the Department of the Navy, Department of Defense, or the United States government. So I would like to touch upon four things in my presentation today. First, I'll talk about the significance of the study, the main objective of the study, and what we identified as aging-related conditions from the literature. Next, I'll present a brief summary of the methodology underlying this analysis, including sample selection, study timeline, and key metrics analyzed. Thereafter, I'll share with you the key findings from the study. And finally, I'll talk about the public health implications of the study findings. Why is it important for us in this room to be mindful of the emerging patterns of pharmaceutical drug use of some of the aging-related medications? Have you ever wondered what America would be like in 2050? Well, I've always wondered what I would be like in 2050. I'm 30 years old and it's 2012. In 2050, I'll be about 68 years old. Well, and along with me and many of you in this room, 88.5 million Americans are also expected to be over the age of 65 by 2050. This right here is the reason alone why we should be paying attention to aging-related medications. The reality today is that we are in the midst of a historically unprecedented demographic shift. The average lifespan of Americans is increasing. And while there's good news in that, it also comes with a price. Living longer means greater need for medical services and greater necessity for medications. But before we can attempt to quantify what this projected need might be in 2050, we need to examine the current cost and utilization patterns of medications of some of these aging-related conditions. In this study, our aim was to look at two things. One was to look at changes in cost and utilization of aging-related medications from 1 year to the next on a per-member-per-year basis. I'll elaborate on the per-member-per-year metric in just a few minutes. Another objective of the study was to look at these per-member-per-year cost and utilization trends for individuals who were privately insured and those covered by Medicare on aging-related medications. But what are these medications and what conditions do they treat? Medications included in the study are those that are commonly used to treat certain human conditions which were identified from the literature to be a normal part of normal aging processes until very recently in the last couple of decades, but are now regarded as medical conditions that can be contained, slowed, or even reversed in some instances due to the availability of drugs, treatment options, and in some part to media generating awareness about these conditions. These seven conditions listed here on the slide were identified from the literature and were together termed as aging-related conditions in this study. With regard to the methodology of the study, we retrospectively analyzed pharmacy claims data for members of a large pharmacy benefit management company who are either privately insured or insured through Medicare. Their claims for the aging-related medications from 2007 to 2011 were descriptively analyzed in order to observe trends in per-member-per-year costs and utilization. Per-member-per-year is a standardized metric, oftentimes used to represent equal amounts of units borne by individuals when the total units are distributed across the population. The units could be anything. It could be monetary, such as costs, expenses, payments, and deaths, or it could be non-monetary, such as number of emergency room visits hospital outpatient visits, inpatient visits, and such, which typically encapsulate utilization. In this study, per member per year cost refers to medication costs for a member in a year, and per member per year utilization refers to the number of prescriptions filled by a member in a year. So doing this resulted in some very interesting findings. Amongst our Medicare members, the cost and utilization trends both increased between 2007 to 11. But what was interesting was that the utilization trend increased 32% over a five-year period. And that is huge. While cost also increased, it increased at a slower rate of 1.3%, indicating that utilization increased almost 25 times that of the cost. If you follow the two maroon lines on the bottom of the table, we can see that while utilization increased consistently between 2007 to 2011, with the exception of 2009, costs increased between 2007 to 2009, but decreased thereafter. It is interesting to note that the only year in which utilization trend was negative was the year when cost was the highest. This could be indicative of people's demand sensitivity towards the price of these medications. The decrease in costs, in spite of a continuing increase in utilization between 2009 and 2011, provides credence to CMS efforts to improve programs. So while in Medicare, utilization increased nearly 25 times the cost, amongst our privately insured members, costs increased nearly three times that of utilization. Costs increased nearly 35% in the last 5 years. With the exception of utilization in 2010, both costs and utilization consistently increased in the last 5 years. Interestingly, the year in which both cost and utilization trends were the least was right before the year when the first of the baby boom generation, those born between 1946 and 1964, entered Medicare. However, this is merely an observation, as establishing this fact and validating it were beyond the scope of the study. Additionally, we found that these findings indicated that the top three cost contributors of Medicare beneficiaries were urinary symptoms non-infection, insomnia, and hormone replacement therapy, together contributing nearly 85% of the total aging-related spend in 2011. The top three contributors of cost amongst our privately insured members were mental alertness, memory issues, urinary symptoms, non-infection, and hormone replacement therapy, together contributing nearly 77% of the total aging-related spend in 2011. What was interesting to note was that in both these categories, urinary symptoms, non-infection, and hormone replacement therapy consistently ranked amongst the top three. So to put this in context, we pulled some additional numbers from the 2011 drug trend report of the same pharmacy benefit manager. As we can see, the spend on medications commonly used to treat the big three chronic conditions range from nearly $63 on high blood pressure heart disease to a little over $81 for diabetes. At $73.33, per member per year, prescription drug cost for medications on aging-related spend was 16% greater than that on hypertension and heart disease, which was at $62.84, behind only to diabetes and high blood cholesterol. This right here highlights that even though individually these conditions might be relatively small and of little impact on the overall spend on prescription drugs, cumulatively, the impact of these conditions is substantial. The key takeaway from this study is that there is an increasing trend in use and cost of these medications year over year, and aging-related medications pose a significant cost burden, paralleling and even in some cases exceeding the cost burden posed by expensive chronic conditions. So what does this mean to us in this room? We know that the population is aging and will continue to do so for years to come. As previously mentioned, with more people living longer years, the need for medical care and medications will continue to grow. So will the use and spend on these medications. As society comes under cost pressure, Unchecked spend on aging-related medications could channel funds away from pressing chronic needs and preventive needs. Also, unchecked spend on these medications could cause some of the employers to reduce their benefits being that they offer to their employees in order to contain some costs. In such a scenario, when chronic needs are unmet, access to preventive services such as vaccinations is scarce due to limited resources, increasing pharmaceutical cost trend of these conditions require close monitoring and cost containment strategies to be put in place. Also, increasing use of these medications could be indicative of a growing medicalization of normal-related, aging-related processes, signaling the need for pharmacy management, utilization management programs to be put in place. Then we might be able to ensure proper use, contain costs, and yet strike a balance between preventive needs, chronic needs, and needs that enhance quality of life and result in healthy aging. So my goal today was to address four things: to highlight why is it important to pay attention to these conditions, to share a brief summary of the methodology, to present the findings, and to talk about the implications of this for public health professionals. But if there's one thing I would really like for you to take away from this presentation, it is that utilization and associated costs of aging-related medications is on the rise. And this calls for better management of both cost and utilization trends. I thank you for your time and would be happy to address any questions you might have. Thank you. Yes. Sorry, I'm a little blind.
Oh, that's okay. How did you choose which age-related medications you were going to focus on? I mean, I can think of other ones that I was surprised.
Definitely.
And then I had a quick clarification, skin aging. I'm curious what that...
Right. So the question was, how did we identify what medications to look at in aging-related category? And the follow-up question to that was, How did we decide on skin aging? Okay. So to address both those questions, one, we looked at the literature to identify first the conditions that are associated with normal process of aging but have been recently medicalized in the last 15, 20 years. So we consulted the literature, published publications in journals and such, as to what has been accepted as aging conditions to begin with. After identifying those conditions, we looked at medications which are commonly used to treat those conditions and identified them from our data. That's how we went about both. And as far as the skin aging question concerned, there has been a lot of debate in literature over people using prescription medications for skin wrinkles and things like that associated with aging, especially women. So we looked at those conditions and included medications which are used to address those particular conditions. Yes?
I struggle to work with the Medicare Part D data, and I would love to know some of the differences, and I apologize if I bore other people. But, for example, you can actually know the cost because you are Express Scripts, whereas Medicare data, we don't know the cost.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. So one question, then, is as a pharmacy benefit manager, that huge drop between 2009 and 2011,
yes.
You could have gone out as a company and got a really good deal on Viagra or something. And so what I would do is challenge you quickly in that year where there was a huge drop to find out what your costs, you know, for these different drugs were. And I would certainly disaggregate this in each of the seven. Because that's a huge drop. And I either want you to show this to the world, show how Medicare has done fantastically well compared to the private sector, or there's something going on here. And the other question related would, you could look at formularies. You know, how did formularies change?
Exactly.
For lots of plans, different plans could choose different drugs.
True.
I think you've got to control for, you know, changes in formularies. And then finally, in the Medicare group, we had the donut hole, which we no longer have.
Yes.
So that could have contributed last year.
True.
Didn't contribute in the
previous year,
but for the last year that could have been a lot of cool questions, right? I think you did a great job, but I would really start drilling down.
Excellent observation and questions. I would like to address a couple of those points. Medicare, as you clearly mentioned, there are formulary differences between the two. There are plan design differences between the two groups, both privately insured group and Medicare. And the example that you took of Viagra is a good example because sexual dysfunction drugs are not covered by Medicare plans. So, yeah, the cost difference that we see are in the Medicare part are only those drugs that are covered by Medicare, and sexual dysfunction drugs are not covered by Medicare. And CMS is also in the process of revising the high-risk medication list that they have and changing their formulary. So that also could impact the trends that we see. But in this study, the main objective was not to find the underlying reasons for the change. It was to look at the cost and utilization trends in the last 5 years. And you're absolutely right. Going forward, further more studies are needed to drill down to the point as to what is causing this trend to and the way it is, what is causing it. But this study looked at only trends.
And maybe just the last comment. Sometimes it's good to use more. You know, I will love it when my wife has beautiful skin.
I'm sure you will. All of us will. Yes. So to that, yes, it is very interesting. We are not making a value judgment on whether this is good or not. We are reporting on what the trends are. And that's why we need utilization management programs. We do not want to limit these access to these drugs, but we want to ensure that the needed access and patient safety is paid attention to while still managing the cost trends. Yes?
Are there any particular reasons as to why Medicaid covered the pharmaceutical ones for now included?
I'm sorry, I did not get the question. It's not covered by Medicare. Okay, so the question, please correct me if I'm wrong. So the question is, why wasn't some drugs included in Medicare? Is that right? We looked at only two groups. We looked at privately insured and we looked at Medicare. We did not look at Medicaid. The reason for that is twofold. One, it was outside the scope of the study, and the reason why we did not pay attention to that is Medicaid individuals, the eligibility varies quite drastically from year to year. People come in and out of the program, whereas Medicare is more stable in terms of eligibility. Any more questions? Well, if you have any more questions, I would be happy to take it offline and answer them later. For now, I'll hand it back to Karen. Thank you very much.